This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, number 126. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
So we're on the naughty boy corner step chair this week after missing a show last week. I've got an excuse. I was away on a top secret mission for Pitch Vision Academy, but
it's been a while. Sleepless nights.
Yeah, exactly. People wondering if we're still alive, or you know, whether the show's gone into hibernation. None of those things are true. We are. We did miss a week, and that's unfortunate. But we are back to full strength, Berners and I. And how are you, Berners?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed. Just mulling over a few highlights of the India series with Joey here. He's developed a full breed of the English language now, and he's a full-blown English cricket supporter. And my Welsh housemate has also made the point that we've now become the English cricket team and not the England and Wales cricket team, as we're so often known during our demise against someone like Zimbabwe.
Well, yeah, there's not many Welshmen pushing for the England team at the moment, are they? That's it. So, Bernard, what's been happening with you then? Are you...
Well, we've been PVing, been busy with a few summer camps and schools, a few demos around the southern parts of England, and obviously keen interest in the Test match. Business end of the season, of course, for many, amateur and professional cricketers alike. So the weather's doing its best to interrupt us, but managed to graft out a nice little 90 against our dear friends down south of the river with Richmond the other day, and broke my toe in the process.
Ouch, how do you manage that?
Yorker slammed in right arm around the wicket, and he's just angled it in. I'm not very good off my legs, not really a typical left-hander who exploits those leg side deliveries, and I just let it hit me. The next ball, I got hit on the back of the head on the helmet, half head, half helmet. I was seeing stars. I was probably on about 5 at the time. Battled my way to 50, ended up with 90.
Perhaps you should injure yourself every week if you're going to start blazing the ball around afterwards.
Yeah, it actually is reverse psychology, because they all thought I was hurt, and to be honest with you, I was hurt, but I just held no fear of either scoring runs or getting out. So I literally didn't want to be on that cricket field. I literally hated the game of cricket, and somehow I got to 90. I just clubbed it to all parts, probably out a couple of times, wasn't given. And it was just one of those days, really. But enough about me. How are things in the valleys?
Well, yeah, I've been keeping myself busy traversing the planet, but everything here is good. We've got lots of work to do to bring some new courses online in the next few weeks, so keep listening out for that. I've just about recovered from getting hit in the face by a cricket ball recently, which I'm not sure we've discussed on the show, have we, Bernard?
No, I don't think we have, but that could be quite amusing.
Well, it's not that amusing. I mean, I was playing a midweek game on a fairly dodgy track. Didn't have my helmet with me because it takes up too much room in my bag if I'm playing a midweek game. Can't be bothered. And the chap decided to push one through a bit, and it hit something. Not sure what it was. But the next thing it hit was my eye.
Oh dear.
So I fell backwards. As I was going down, I thought, oh, this is it, it's all over, I've been blinded, I may even be dead for all I know. And I lay there for a moment, and it didn't hurt. I actually didn't want to get up, because I thought, if I get up, it's probably going to start hurting, and I'm probably going to realise the extent of the damage, which I really didn't want to do. So I lay there for a minute, which probably didn't help the fact that everyone was rushing over to see what was going on, to see someone lying there completely stationary. They probably thought I was dead as well. But it was more out of fear about the fact that it hadn't hurt. And then I got up, and it still didn't hurt. And I opened my eye, and I could see out of it. For that was a moment of joy, I can tell you.
Yeah.
I got up and I thought, well, this is amazing. It doesn't hurt, and I can still see out of it. And there was a little bit of blood from a cut on my nose, but it wasn't anything too bad. And I thought to myself, well, I can just carry on here. And then I thought, no, probably better not, just in case. I've been hit square in the face.
Yeah.
It was literally a matter of going, well, maybe I'm in shock or something. And I walked off the pitch it was the last over anyway, so it didn't really matter too much. Walked off the pitch for the last over. The standing wicketkeeper was a comedy of errors for the next few balls, including missing an absolute dead set on run out by trying to throw the ball at the stumps from about 2 yards away instead of just
missing
and missing. So that was incredible. And and then I thought to myself, well, I'm all right here. I didn't bat, but we don't have umpires in our midweek games very often. So I said, right, don't worry, I'll umpire. So I walked out to umpired the entire second innings.
It's one of those where your wife's trying to get you to casualty for an X-ray and you're quite happy to play on and drive home with the kids in the back after the game.
And do you know what? I was absolutely fine. I mean, the swelling was horrific. It looked like, you know, I looked like the Elephant Man for a couple of days. And then the swelling went down and it was fine. So either I'm incredibly resilient to injury, or I've caused myself some serious damage and I'm probably going to keel over one day in the distant future. I'm not sure which it is.
I want our listeners to send us their craziest cricketing injuries. I'm quite sick like that, and I want to know what's happened. I once took my helmet off when I was on about 70 because they brought the spinners on, nudged one into mid wicket. I was on cricket falling, not looking, and it's hit me straight on the temple from the outfield, straight on the side of the head. I woke up in Truro Hospital, still have my box on, my thigh pad, even my cricket spikes.
Really?
And about 4 hours later, I had to be signed out. You know, they said, you know, you've got to have someone who comes in the evening and checks you're okay and you've got a bit of concussion. One of the tour members came, picked me up, and took me straight to the nightclub that the boys were drinking in Newquay. And I'm stood in the middle of this nightclub in Newquay with my thigh pad on, my box, my spikes, and I'm handed a couple of Sambucas, and it's come on, Berners, off we go, son, you're fine. And I'm just totally dazed. And the responsible adults, that was their reaction. Next morning, of course, no one checked if I was okay during the night. Woke up, come on, Tuffers, you're late for breakfast. Just like, hang on a minute, I think I could have been dead here.
And being a tour, I suspect you got fined for it happening as well, did you?
Yeah, fine for letting it happen. No, I think the fine was for being so cocky to take my helmet off as I drifted into the 70s and then getting knocked out by the ball on a return throw to the crease. But the boys watching said it sounded like it hit my bat. That was the kind of woody noise which was off my nut. Well, as you guys could testify, it's probably doing me a privilege saying it was a woody noise. But
right off the meat of your skull. Is that
right off the meat of my skull, yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Well, we are hoping to help people improve here as well. And so that's why this week we've got the next part of our interview with Menno Gazendam, our South African spin bowling coach, who has got some more tips for us on how to improve your bowling spin in the third part of the interview. So that's coming up next. And then after that interview, we'll be answering your questions. So stay tuned and maybe you've got a chance to win a prize. When we say spin bowler, that's a little bit of a misnomer. It's spin is just one of the tools that a spin bowler has available to him. And, you know, really, if you'll be honest about it, you call everybody a spin, flight, drift, dip, angle and variation bowler. But that's a bit too long, isn't it?
But that's exactly what it is. And that's what many coaches don't get, as many spin bowlers don't get. It's an easy thing. I mean, we just ran through it quickly. It's an easy thing to grasp, but some of bowlers don't grasp it. I mean, when I'm in the nets and I bowl, and our number three batsman is turning his arm over next to me in the net, and we both spin the ball, and he's got big hands, gives the ball a big grip, and it spins big. And if you're just an observer, you think, okay, well, he's a spin bowler. But the difference is when I bowl, my ball is actually drifting. The ball is actually dipping on the batsman. I'm getting my flight just above his eyes. So go ask the batsman who's the more difficult one to play. And it will be me because I'm deceiving him there. He doesn't know, should he play forward, should he play back? Where's this ball going to pitch? I can go on the front foot to drive, but it's, every time I drive, it feels like I'm not there because the ball just falls short of me. So I've got to step out of the wicket. And once I step out of the wicket, they're in trouble because now the outside crease, if that ball spins and they miss it, something. So, spin ball is actually a bit of a misnomer. That's really just the short name for us. What we really do is we deceive the batsman there and we just cap it off by giving an extra turn.
And of course, all that does rely on accuracy, which is, as you were saying, get that length that the batsman is always feeling like he's reaching for it, but not giving him enough short of a length to be able to play back. So but that can vary depending on the conditions and the batsman. So how do you analyze where to get the ball to pitch?
Really judging which line and length should bowl. It's not a one rule fits all. I can't tell you an X on the pitch and say, okay, just if you pitch the ball there every time, you're going to get wickets. It doesn't work like that. What you need to do is you need to decide what kind of attack you're taking. Are you bowling defensive line or attacking line? Now, I hope all spin bowlers go for an attacking line. Yes, there are some times you need to go for the defensive line, but by default, we start off we're proud spinners. We go for attacking lines. Yes, we're going to go for a few runs, but we're going to take wickets. And to get that attacking line, we can go all night speaking on what a perfect line is, but really what works most of the time is to try and get the batsman driving. Now, if you can get a batsman driving at you, yes, you might smack you through, putting up chances for you, giving you risks that you might hit one into recover's hands, you might miss it, you might get stumped, you might get bowled through the gate if you're off here, you might get stumped when going past the bat, if you're leggy. So you're trying to get the batsman to drive. So that's really where the line length comes in. You've got to judge where is this batsman's drivable length? Where can I draw him forward to drive? And that's different for every single batsman, for every single game situation, every single pitch that you're going to play. Again, going back to the test, the first test match this past week, I saw a nice Hawkeye clip of where the batsmen were playing the ball. And they were comparing Peterson and Dravid and Tendulkar. And Dravid was shown as playing the ball very close to his body. If you take the camera angle from the side, he plays very, very late, under his eyes, very close to his body. Peterson is way in front, probably about a meter and a half in front of Dravid. He takes all his deliveries. And then you've got Tendulkar, who plays in the middle. Now, you would actually think Tendulkar would probably play the ball because he's the shortest of the three and you have the shortest reach. But it's actually not the case. He actually reaches further than Dravid most of the case. Dravid likes to take it late. And that just shows you that every batsman is different. They will come forward for different length deliveries they feel comfortable with. So you've got to suss out where that length of that batsman is to draw him forward. Is the pitch slow? Added to that, then you might have to push it through a little bit quicker. Because otherwise the batsman's all the time in the world just to rock back for a ball. He'd normally drive, he'd actually just rock back and plays with the back foot, which you don't want. So you want to push it maybe through a little quicker. So you need to judge the pitch. If it's a very quick pitch and the ball's not spinning, but skidding on, then you can actually maybe just drop that length, come back a bit to that length. But what you're really trying to do is you're trying to get the batsman to take risks, drive at your deliveries, and for that you need to judge which batsman goes for the drive on what length. So you might have two batsmen at the crease and you're going to be bowling 2-1 comes out for what length.
And is that difficult when you've got, say, I mean, let's say for argument's sake, you've got Peterson at one end and Dravid at the other end. I don't know how that had happened, but let's say you have
a world 11.
Exactly, yeah. And you've got the daunting task of bowling to these great pair. And so you've got one playing very far in front and you've got one playing right under his eyes. How do you, let me rephrase that. How difficult is it to make the adjustment of length every time that they take a quick single or whatever they do and they change ends?
Yeah, it's difficult. I'm not going to deny that. And that's why teams love playing left-handed in the team, is because it does upset the bowler's line, line and length. I find it frustrating. I don't know if any other bowler who does it does find it not frustrating having a right-hand or a left-hand or two very different batsmen like a Peterson and Drawer that plays one way in front and way in the back. They play completely differently and you have to bowl differently to both of them. There's no denying it. It's frustrating. But it's an actual tactic of teams to do that. That's why lefties will open left hand and right hand. Teams love doing that. Now, the only thing you need to do with this is you need to deal with it. It's a fact of life. It's a fact of the game. You're going to get plenty of situations where you've got two really good batsmen that play completely differently at the crease. And they're taking quick singles. And every ball you've got to vary. Now, what you can do is you can prepare for that. What I like to do in the nets is when I bowl, I usually don't like just bowling for one batsman. That's not always an option, but when I get two batsmen in the nets, I actually have one standing at the non-striker's end. And you know, when they hit the ball against the net and they call a quick single, it's sort of fitness exercise for them as well. But what it allows me to do is as a bowler, it allows me to be in the nets on how to vary my line and length to different type batsmen. That's something you need to practice because now one ball is full and straight. Next ball, because that's where that batsman struggles, but the other one is slow and wide. And you mix that up and one ball is full and wide, one ball is full and straight, one and wide, etc. But the only way you're going to deal with that is if you actually prepare for that type of match situation. It doesn't help you get into the match and you're used to the same line of length bowling and you're struggling to adapt in the game. You actually need to be match ready by preparing the nets, bowling different line of lengths. If you can't find two batsmen to play against in the nets, which is the ideal situation, then set yourself two targets. You know, all bowlers put a target on the pitch and they aim for that ideal line of length. Why can't you have two targets there, right? For a Drawer type batsman and for a Peterson type batsman. Or for a right-hander and a left-hander. And you vary your pace. You vary your line and length. And you try and hit one target, aim for the one target, and then you aim for the other target. And then you aim for the first target again, and then for the second target. And you mix it up. So to deal with that in the match. You actually have to be prepared for that during your net session, during your practice session.
Time now for the question section on the show, and as you already know, you have a chance to win a prize if you send your question into the show, and that prize is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. We have a range of online coaching for just about every cricket discipline you can think of, from scoring, opening the batting for your country and scoring 100, to taking 5 wickets, to being a stand-in umpire in your club match. Berners, you've got the questions this week. So who's the first person to be in with a chance of winning the prize?
We've got quite an interesting question here. It's more of a life-depending question by the sounds of things.
All right.
from Bataya Saksham, who's from India.
Yeah.
And as he describes, "Sir, I'm a child from India. I'm 15 years old."
Yeah.
And this is all about a bit of parent pressure with regards to his career. He's a really keen batsman and he's playing a lot of cricket. And his parents are saying, "Look, you're not going to be good enough to play. You need to start studying." Mm. And he doesn't know what to do currently. He wants it to fit in with an engineering course he's doing. And he also wants to continue playing his cricket. At the moment, he's working for 6 hours a day on his batting. So he's got a lot of passion. He's really intent on doing this. But obviously the parents are being a little bit wary about where he's heading. So he was just asking what we would recommend, or not me, because I would probably tell him to, I don't know, go and dance with dingbats. But you might well give him a bit more of a helpful insight.
Yeah, well, it is a bit of a dilemma for somebody who can play a bit. I mean, you know, you're on the one hand, you've got the possibility of making a career out of something that you love doing, and on the other hand, it's not exactly the safest career. You know, even the finest players are done by the time they're in their late 30s. So you can understand why parents are saying, you know, keep your feet on the ground. You know, don't chase the dream. Try and try and get a career behind you. And I think it's a decision. It's a very personal decision. You can't really give general advice on something like this. But what I would say is that you probably need to get as much input from as many people as possible to find out what your chances are of making it. I mean, if you're an absolute superstar, then your chances of making it are good, and you can focus a little bit more on the cricket. Doesn't mean you have to give up totally on the other side of things. I mean, there's plenty of cricketers the world over who are very highly educated, and they have a trade behind them as well as being cricketers. And I know certainly in this country, perhaps not so much in India, but I know certainly in this country, the Professional Cricket Association is brilliant for encouraging people to think about what they're going to do when they finish playing. And you can, you know, you can do degrees and things like that while you're playing. Who is Sangakkara, is it, who studied at a very high level while he was still playing international cricket? I can't quite remember the story there, but he's certainly, Sangakkara has managed to combine the two, even while being considered one of the finest players in world cricket. So there's no reason why you can't do both. If you're not quite so good a player, then perhaps you need to be a bit more realistic. I mean, it's all well and good having great ambitions, but if everyone you talk to says, well, look, you know, I'm going to be realistic, there's a lot of very talented people in this part of the world, and you don't fall into the top category just about, then maybe you have to be a bit more realistic with yourself and pull back a little bit on the cricket and focus a little bit more on the educational side.
On the academic side.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you can, you need to be honest with yourself. And like you say, you know, you can quickly ascertain whether you've got a little bit of talent about you and what your coaches are kind of saying and the vibe around, you know, the team that you're involved in. If you're a young star, then the parents will probably be able to get some information back from the coach that would lead them to believe that their child could possibly go all the way or whatever. If it's just him saying to his mum, I want to be the next Sachin Tendulkar, and there's not a lot of you know, weight behind that from references and his coaches, then yeah, he's got to get back to the real world, I'm afraid, because I know in England, especially with the football, every young kid wants to play for Liverpool or Manchester United, and once you get to about the age of 16, you know, you've got to start studying on your GCSEs, your exams, and likewise in India, I guess you've got to formulate a plan for the future.
Exactly. And the key thing, I think the key point is that you don't have to give up on one to do the other. You can, it is quite possible to do both. It just depending on how much you focus between the two. If you're playing cricket 6 hours a day and those 6 hours are just you messing around in the nets with your mates, then, you know, you've got your priorities wrong there. If you're playing, you know, if you're doing a very intense training program for 6 hours a day and that's helping you score lots of runs or take lots of wickets, then that's a different story. So you have to be well, you have to be well planned, you have to work hard, and you have to be realistic. And as long as you do those things and you're honest with yourself, then I think that's probably the best general career advice that we can give. When did you give up on professional cricket, Berners, or are you still hoping?
Mate, I go out there to bat every single Saturday, and I tell you what, if one of those selectors came and watched me, I'd be drafted straight in for one of the championship games. I've never, just never had that chance, coach. So, I've never had that chance.
Yeah, I think I gave up on professional cricket about a year ago.
Yeah.
Probably. I think I'm probably a little bit too long in the tooth. At 34, I thought, yeah, maybe the chance has passed me now.
I would say the closest I ever came was during my days of Glamorgan UCC cricket. Yeah. We were playing a pre-season friendly against Gloucester. We arrived at Bristol. One of the Bristol Academy players or something broke his finger in the warm-up.
Yeah.
I was 12th man for Glamorgan, drafted in to play for Gloucestershire.
Right.
So issued with the whole Gloucestershire kit, yeah. Mitsubishi shirt and whatnot.
Yeah.
wandered off down to Fine Leg to enjoy my. It was a three day game, so it could have been the best part of 90 overs in the field.
Yeah.
And a young Gloucestershire supporter wandered around to me with the old signature bat and said, "Please, can I have your autograph?" And I looked at him and I thought, "This isn't morally, ethically right in any aspect or form of life." I signed it.
Of course.
And a couple of the Glamorgan lads, who my teammates who were sat on the balcony, saw it, and my name was Mud, and I got absolute dirt piled upon me the whole way back across the Severn Bridge a couple of days later, which was quite amusing.
Of course you signed it. I'm surprised you didn't sign it. All the best, Viv Richards.
It was quite embarrassing. Yeah. My friend's actually the kit man of Leighton Orient Football Club, and of course he dresses in the same kind of attire as a lot of the players and coaching staff, and he gets that week in, week out.
Yeah.
And he often says it's easier just to sign it rather than give them the whole explanation of why you shouldn't. So
there you go.
I did the right thing.
So this wasn't a first class match then?
No, it was a pre-season friendly. No, you wouldn't find any.
There's no record.
There'd be no record of it. It was Glamorgan UCC against Gloucestershire second team stroke academy. So.
So yeah. It's a second team. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have played county second 11 cricket then? Is that what you're saying?
UCC cricket.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's close enough.
Yeah, it's close enough. I could blag it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I've never got any even that close. So I've got to say, I've been a club player. Man and boy, first team cricket is as good as I've ever managed. So you've stuffed me up on that one. But you know, that's the way it goes, isn't it? You know, some people make it, some people don't.
There you go.
Right, what's the next question, Bernard?
So we got another. So our next question comes in from Anthony Morris. Anthony has come across a very famous ex bowler called Joe Garner, who famously once said, "Man, if you want to be fast, you've got to be loose." So anyway, this got Anthony thinking. And as he has thought about this, he's considered himself rather stiff, which is quite a ghastly thought of a human being. But he's a stiff human being and wanted to become slightly more flexible. So as he got older, obviously the competition will become a bit greater. And just didn't want others getting the edge over his own kind of performance and his ability to be flexible or non-flexible. So wanted to make a stance on this and wonders what we can do to help him. He has overcome a shin splints injury and the doctors turned around to him and said, "Yes, you need to become more flexible as well due to that." So What's your advice here, coach? Some good questions this week.
As always, Bernard, as always. Flexibility is one of those things where if you ask someone, ask a layperson, then they're going to say, "Oh well, do a few stretches before you go to the gym, or you know,
work." It's your hamstrings.
The hamstrings.
Stretch your hamstrings.
Yeah, bend over, touch your toes a few times, you'll be fine. Do that old fashioned thing where you stand with your legs wide apart and you touch your toe with your opposite hand, and then do the other side. Yeah. Which, as far as I can see, just goes to crunch your lower back, as far as I can see.
Come on, you're not touching your toes. Hang on a minute, I can't touch my kneecap, let alone my toes.
Yeah, exactly. But it's if you want to, and everyone should work on that flexibility, because the world we live in today, we spend our time sitting around. Some people spend their lives sitting around, you know, driving to and from work and then doing a job that they hate, sitting around, or at school, you know, sitting around and then come home and sit around and watch the telly. And if it's like us, Berners, we sit around chatting to each other over the internet about cricket, but we're still all just sitting around. So you've got to do something to counter that stiffness. And, you know, and as Joel Garner said, and he's absolutely right, you do have to be loose. And the way to do that is more than a few stretches before the gym or in your warm-up. You know, you've got to really do it properly. Stretching before playing cricket isn't the best time to do it. You've got to be working on it regularly. You know, if you are really stiff, which most people are, then, you know, something you do every day, something you need to work in to your daily routine. If you can do that, if you can work something like, you know, if you can work in a proper stretching routine into your daily schedule, then you'll be all right, because it does make a difference to your flexibility. And but you've really got to work on it. So it's no good doing, you know, a quick 30-second calf stretch. You know, you've really got to hold those types of stretches for a long period of time, and especially in the areas where you're particularly tight, which for most people is around the hips, all sort of different directions around the hips. The upper chest is another very stiff area for a lot of people. Neck is quite a stiff area for a lot of people, and ankles is quite a stiff area. When we talk about flexibility, suppleness or these words, we're actually talking about several different things. We're talking about the quality of the tissue itself, which is, you know, for example, if you've had a heavy training session and the next day you feel a bit sore, you know, that's where tissue quality has been degraded by training. And you can counter that to a certain extent by right amount of stretching. You're talking about the range of motion through the joint. You're talking about the ability of your body to stabilize while you go through that range of motion. Because if your body can't stabilize itself, it will stop you. A classic example is the squat, you know, the double leg squat, where you stand with your feet about shoulder width apart, you squat your bum down towards the ground. If you can't get more than about halfway, it's often not to do with how flexible your hips are, but it's more to do with your how strong your core is, and the fact that if the core gets to a certain point where it thinks, well, hang on a second, I'm going to fall over if we carry on going, then it stops you from going any further. So you think, oh gosh, I'm stiff, but the truth is you're not stiff. You're flexible, but you're not, your core isn't strong enough. So we're talking about core strength, and we're also talking about the length of the muscles as well. So all of those things go into flexibility. So the solution for doing that is, which is something I go on about all the time, is get yourself two things. Get yourself a foam roller, and get yourself probably the easiest way to do it is to get yourself a bowling machine ball, you know, from a typical bowling machine, or a lacrosse ball, which is a little bit of a smaller version of a bowling machine ball, basically. And with those two things and your own ability to stretch, you can spend 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes a day stretching, rolling, and getting the muscles and joints working in ways that is the opposite of what you do for the rest of the day.
What about power plates, coach? I know that in my squash club I play a lot of squash, and I quite often use those as a way to get rid of any lactic acid in my joints, and they work pretty well. If you've got access to one of them, I can highly recommend it.
Well, they're a little bit of a gimmick. They do aid in recovery from exercise. They don't help specifically with suppleness, but what you can do is, you know, if you're playing cricket 2 days in a row or something, it's good to, you know that you're not going to feel as stiff the next day. They are a little bit of a gimmick, because you can get the same effect from just stretching and foam rolling and using the bowling machine ball to release the tension in the muscles. You know, a bit like giving yourself a massage, really, and then doing sort of lots of active mobility type work. And if you do that regularly enough, you'll stop the process of aging on the joints, which is quite an amazing thing. And if you really aggressively do it, you can actually reverse the process of aging on those joints, which is a nice thing to know. So especially as someone gets older, I mean, everyone should do it, but especially as someone gets older, it's really, really important to make sure that you are working on your flexibility every day if you need to, but as a minimum 3 times a week. And that's everybody from 90-year-olds to 12-year-olds, or even younger, 10-year-olds. So, get stretching, do the old fashioned stretches, do the active mobility stretches, get yourself a foam roller, do the foam rolling. By the way, you can find out about all these things on the Pitch Vision Academy website. If you go on there and you do a search for any of these things that I've talked about, there's absolutely bundles of resources, including a free ebook on how to do foam rolling. The first I remember the first time I ever did foam roller, I heard all about it, bought myself a foam roller. I thought, well, you know, I'll drop the £12 on it. I'll go for it. See if it's any good, even if it's rubbish. Okay, it's 12 quid wasted, but at least I've had a go. And it's brilliant. I felt like Mr. Soft. You remember Mr. Soft from the adverts in the 80s?
Yeah. Fido Dido.
Well, you know, somebody, you know, it just I felt like my entire body had been just sort of released of tension, and I was wandering around as if I was so laid back and relaxed. It was fantastic. So if you've never tried it, regardless of cricket or not, just give it a go, because it's amazing. That is the end of the show, and as you know, we give away a prize every week when we're here of a Pitch Vision Academy online coaching course. So, Berners, who is the winner of this week's online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy?
I think due to his stiffness and his ability to get loose, it's Anthony.
Yeah, you've got to be loose at the right time, stiff at the right time, and then everything goes right, doesn't it?
The big bird.
That's the end of the show, so don't forget that you can submit your own questions to us if you email us on what's the email address, Bernice?
It's coach@pitchvision.com.
And the phone number?
020-88-167-691.
You can also tweet us on @PVCricketCoach, and if you go to the Pitch Vision Academy page on Facebook, you can send us a message through there. I do still check it every day, even though I've been a little bit slack on posting new stuff on there. But don't hold that against me, because it's a very good page with some good people discussing good things on there. Also, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. So if you've got iTunes on your computer, and who hasn't, then you can go into iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, click on subscribe, and you can get the updates to the show every week without having to check back. If you don't have iTunes, then you can subscribe to the feed in any reader. And on my new phone, I've been listening to it on Google Listen. So I think maybe it's slightly self-centered listening to myself, but I don't care. I'm enjoying using the technology. That's all for this week. So good to chat to you again, Berners. And until next time, we'll see you next week.
Toodaloo, good to be back.